56% of Iowa farmland is owned by people over the age of 65. What will happen to that land as the owners retire, sell, or pass away? There's no easy answer. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. There was a time when a family farm would stay in the family generation after generation. Times have changed, and so has land ownership in Iowa. This hour, Map of My Kingdom, a new play by Mary Swander, Iowa's poet laureate, delves into the complex issue of farm transfer by focusing on personal stories. I'll talk with her, and farmer Tom Franzen will tell his personal story. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The land in Iowa is our most valuable resource. And for people who want to farm, getting access to land is one of the greatest challenges. For farmers who've reached the end of their careers, the question of what will happen to their land can be a very difficult one. This hour, Map of My Kingdom, a new play by Mary Swander, Iowa's poet laureate, delves into the complex issue of farm transfer by focusing on personal stories. And coming up later in the hour, I'll talk with Tom Franzen. He's a farmer who watched the struggle when his family farm passed from his grandparents to his father and was part of a smoother transition when the farm came to him. He's also planning for the future. And this hour, we want to hear your stories and your experiences. What has happened with farm transfer in your family? Did it go well? Was it ugly? What are the repercussions? You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mary Swander is here with me now. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. Oh,
thanks for having me.
Now, tell me how the idea for this play came about.
I was approached by Practical Farmers of Iowa, and which is based in Ames, and they commissioned me to write a play about farmland transfer. And I had experienced this issue in my own family. My mother's family homesteaded in Iowa, so I actually had a history of four generations going through this. And I thought there was conflict there from my own experience, but once I started hearing other people's stories, I realized there was more than conflict. Murder sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure that for some people, hearing the idea of, hey, why don't you write a play about farm transfer? I could see that sounding like a daunting task. But you saw the possibilities there right away.
Right. I mean, you know, when I tell people that's what the play is about, sometimes I just get this blank stare. And I said, well, if you've experienced it, you know how tense it is. Yeah.
And I know, and I've done a number of shows with Practical Farmers of Iowa about this very issue, because it is such a huge issue in Iowa right now. I'm curious, though, why the idea of a play about farmland transfer? I mean, we've got plenty of education about farmland transfer. We have mentorship programs and all kinds of things going on. What can a play do?
A play can invite in an audience that, you know, with people in the audience that might not come to another one, yet one more PowerPoint presentation. And it can relax people enough, transport them to a creative zone where they're actually, after the play, one of the most important things is the talk back post-performance discussion, where they can actually engage with other people about these issues and start thinking about them themselves. So, for example, the play debuted in July at Scattergood School. And as I was walking out, I heard people in the audience say, well, you know, we own farmland. We'd never thought about what's going to happen to it. And, you know, these are people in their 50s and 60s. And so it's time to start thinking about it.
Definitely time to start planning. Yeah. Well, tell me about your personal family history. What happened in your family that made you think, oh, there are stories to be told here?
Well, we had many escapades, and The most colorful one was my great-grandfather that homesteaded left. He had a fair amount of farmland, and he had 10 kids, and he left them farms. And he left my Uncle George, who was, quite a character, shall we say, and he left his in a trust. And so which was fairly common, you know, depending on, you know, the tax laws and so forth. And so he left the lawyer in charge of holding the purse strings, and George didn't like that and was always running out of money. And so he actually appeared on the lawyer's front step with a shotgun one day. And my grandmother tried to atone to that family the rest of her life. So it can get very, very intense.
In preparation for writing this play, how did you go about gathering stories?
Various ways. I've been a longtime member of Practical Farmers of Iowa, and they had a fabulous seminar on the topic at one of the conferences. And so I went to that conference and really paid attention, talked to people that were attending, and then kind of got the framework of what's going on right now, 21st century, with this issue. And then Teresa Ofheim, the director of Practical Farmers of Iowa, was great, and she gave me contacts of people that would have different perspectives on the issue. So I drove around the state and interviewed people and talked to them about their stories. And then I wound in to the play some of them, we had more than Uncle George in terms of stories in my own family. So I just fictionalized everything and wound them all together.
So you combined some of the stories for dramatic purposes.
Right.
And this is not a nonfiction play.
No, this is all made up. And then I read a lot of background about the issue. That was, that's the fun part about a writer. You get to do that kind of research. So I read about, the history, the big sweep of the history of agriculture in the United States.
And how did you put it all together? This is a one-woman show, right?
This is a one-woman show. I wanted to make it easy to tour, easy to produce, very flexible. And so I thought, we'll make it a one-person show, but then who's that character going to be? And I ended up interviewing a mediator who helped families make this transition, because it can, brothers and sisters end up not talking to each other the rest of their lives. Fathers and sons can have falling out. It's just incredibly difficult sometimes.
And it can be a huge financial crisis as well.
Oh, everybody has a different end result in mind. And so I thought, what an interesting job, mediating these kinds of decisions. And so I thought that would be the perfect person to tell these stories. And so it's one actor, a woman, and five file boxes for the set, make the show. We take pride in being able to go into any space. We don't need fancy lights or equipment, sound or anything like that. So we started out in the meeting house in Scattergood, and we're going to be in other churches and school auditoriums and any space that can hold a nice group of people for an audience.
Now, you have been doing this sort of thing now for several years with several different performances and plays. I'm curious about what kind of a response, what kind of a difference do you feel it's made over the last few years to have your plays performed and to tell the stories of farmers in Iowa and elsewhere?
I started out with a class project called Farmscape that I worked with my students at Iowa State, and it was a surprise to me that the play took off and started touring, and it's 7 years later still touring. And then I've done several others, Vang, a play about immigrant farmers. And I've really, really enjoyed this part of my career because, you know, you're out there with the real people who are engaged in agriculture and other endeavors in your own location. And, you know, it's local, it's regional. And most people come up to me and say, this is just fantastic. We never see ourselves reflected back through any kind of media or literary event. It's always somebody in New York or, you know, somebody in a different class or, you know, race or whatever it might be. And that's been really rewarding. And then people, again, the ideas get people engaged in the issues and talking about these topics.
Well, in thinking even about some of the literature that has been in the Midwest, I mean, you think about A Thousand Acres and movies like Country and things like that. The you know, the stories of farmers in those places, that popular literature, popular movies, there always have to be these huge, horrible happenings, you know, these crises to create the plot. But you're creating literature and art out of really the everyday.
That's right. And there is blockbusters always have to have, you know, tie everything up in a bow and have a happy ending usually. And most people's lives are, you know, there's dramatic ups and downs and it doesn't all wrap up neatly. But what I have found is irony. People's lives really have irony. I think especially in the Midwest, they have these echoes back to through generations or through their own experiences. And that's what I try to bring out in the pieces.
This is not nonfiction, but a lot of the stories that are told in this play and in your other plays are based on reality. And we'll talk with Tom Franzen in just a moment. He's one of the people who inspired part of this play. What do the people who are fictionalized in these stories, how do they respond to seeing their stories told in this way?
Oh, I've tried to disguise them as much as I could, fictionalize them. But, you know, it's always weird to you know, see yourself reflected in a piece of writing. I've had that problem myself. I'm like, that's not me. What are you doing here? actually, I've been made little cameo appearances in several of Jane Smiley's books. So that's always funny. It's like, oh, when am I going to make my entrance? Oh, there I am.
Well, Jane's got a new book. We'll have to look for you.
For you
in that one. She'll be on the show here in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Mary Swander about her latest play. It's called Map of My Kingdom, and it's a play about farm transfer. There are several different performances of the play coming up soon. One in Sheridan just on Thursday, September 25th, so week after next. It's at 6 p.m., part of the Vredenburg Performing Arts Series. It'll be performed in Red Oak on Sunday, September 28th, and then in Cedar Falls on October 16th. So there are many opportunities to be a part of the audience. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a new play called Map of My Kingdom. It's by Iowa's poet laureate, Mary Swander, and it delves into the complex issue of farm transfer as told through personal stories. And in just a moment, I'm going to bring in one of the people who inspired one of the stories in this play, or at least part of one of the stories in this play. But I also want to let you know that you're welcome to join our conversation with your stories at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mike is on the line in Ames. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How are you today?
Oh, not too bad. Just harvesting silage.
All right. Well, what would you like to talk about?
Well, as a young farmer who's basically just starting out, kind of, I've been going at it for about 4 years now. My grandfather, who's approaching 80, still trying to get himself to retire, I'm going to be asked to go through this whole transfer procedures and whatnot. I figure people who are in my situation, I started looking up online, ought to look into beginning farmer programs, or if you're a veteran, there's a Veterans Farmers Coalition of Iowa that'll help with grants or tax deductions and stuff for that.
So the resources are out there, you're saying?
Yeah, there are resources out there, because I thought if I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to have no help. But with the new farm bill that came out, they've got grants, tax deductions, all kinds of resources for beginning farmers and farm transfers for the transferor and the transferee.
All right, Mike, well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that.
Yep, no problem.
And I know, Mary, that as we were saying earlier, Practical Farmers of Iowa has been working on the farm transfer issues for a long time, and that's really where the inspiration came from for this play. Were you surprised at all when you started looking into the statistics? I mentioned one earlier, 56% of Iowa farmland is owned by people over the age of 65. So that is a lot of farmland that is going to be changing hands.
It's a huge amount of farmland. And also, a lot of that farmland is owned by women. And so people don't often think about that. And, we need to engage those women and those other people who own farmland in this discussion. There are also lots of farmers who rent land from these people who have the land but have yet to maybe set up something for the future. And so it makes those renters very vulnerable.
Right, because then if someone passes away and the land is divided among their heirs, it's a very easy opportunity to cash out, because Iowa farmland is extraordinarily valuable.
Right.
Especially right now. I mean, the prices are so high.
The rising land prices has put intense pressure on this process. And also, Tom's going to join us in a minute, but one of the things I learned from him is our idea of fairness is not always fair. You know, let's say you have this is one of the stories that I gathered. A woman had six kids. She owned the farmland, and she, divided it all up among the six kids, and then there's nothing left because they can't, farm a tiny little strip. And then the one that wants to farm, can they buy out the other siblings? There's just issues like that when you start to divide the map of your kingdom.
Right. And Tom, let's bring you into the conversation now. Tom Franzen is a farmer, farms near North New Hampton. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, very, very glad to be here.
And I want to talk about your story, because I know that you started farming full-time in 1974. And we'll go back before that in a little while and talk about the farm transfers you had seen in the past. But I want to talk about an experience that you had as a young farmer in 1979 that really changed your life profoundly. And that was when Pope John Paul II came to Iowa. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah. Of course, both my parents grew up in a rural Catholic community. And so that was a situation with both my parents. And my mother was very excited when plans were made for the Pope to come to Iowa. I had been farming probably 5 years, and I knew about it, and I was watching some of the events in the paper, but I had made no plans. And then so she went, and my dad didn't, and I was home, and it was just a really pretty October day, I remember. I can't tell the story without getting emotional. I don't know why, but I was painting the barn, and when the Pope, I had the message that the land here is to be preserved for generation upon generation.
So you're painting.
I'm getting orange. I got to laugh a little bit. I actually felt like he was on a ladder with me. I was absolutely dumbstruck, and I crawled off the ladder and I put my paintbrush down and I walked around the farm, and it was a time of great thought, because I knew that things had to change. And then, so it was a time that really turned my head in a different direction. But, at that time, there was no Practical Farmers of Iowa or Land Stewardship Project. And so I was in a different direction, but without a path in front of me, is what I would say. But it was a Pope's message, definitely was an enormous event that, oddly enough, this many, many, many years later, I can't retell without having tears coming along the face. And I can't explain that by any means.
So in that moment, it changed how you thought about the land you were farming.
It struck me greatly and it directly. That's the way I took the message. It was all about what we're doing. Absolutely.
How do you think that has guided your path over the years?
Because of the different direction, I knew that we had to be looking for generation upon generation and for preservation for long term. So that message just really, really, really struck. So it wasn't land yours be preserved. He used the word generation upon generation. So it got me thinking long term. So like I said, it changed my direction, and it was like an opening to a different path, but not knowing the path in front of us.
And over the years, you've made some decisions that I'm guessing they were in some ways tough decisions. You've diversified your farm. What else have you done?
Well, the Practical Farmers of Iowa came into being in the mid-1980s. The Land Stewardship Project came into being in the early 1980s. We were members of both. Joined the Practical Farmers soon after the organization began. And so, you're really influenced a lot by the people you hang around with. So it's the likes of people like Dick Thompson, Larry Callum, those founders, Ron Roseman. So when you start to hang around with those people and you become part of an association with them, then, your attitudes and your thoughts, are supported. And there's also new developments. So it was a change in both. That was the beginning of where we could see steps to the path. I would say the Pope's message gave us a direction, but the other developments would now give us steps in a path of a different way to maintain and preserve these resources.
So now let's go back a little bit. Because you have seen farm transfer twice in your lifetime. You're looking ahead to the future as well, to when the farm passes from your hands. But let's go back to when your grandparents owned the farm. They'd owned the farm, since 1911? They had 9 kids. What was their plan?
Yeah, that's very interesting because my grandparents moved here because of family disputes over the land that they were having near Marshalltown, Iowa in 1910. So it's actually a very old story. But my grandparents actually farmed about a mile away from where we are. My parents moved this place in 1935 and bought it in the late 1930s. But there also was an additional part of this farm that my father wanted to buy. My grandfather said, no, he says, I'm going to buy it and give it for you because you work for me as an unpaid hired man for 10 years. It was one of these agreements, Well, then my grandfather dies fairly unexpectedly, and there was no provisions made in the will for that. So my father ended up renting a piece of land that was part of this farm his entire life. He actually never farmed it for a year when he actually could say he owned it due to a failure of estate planning and due to good intentions that were never put down on paper so they could be followed through. So my father suffered a grave injustice over his entire life over this failure, but it strongly motivated him, and he was very clear with a couple things in his estate planning. And the first one is, this is not to be put off. And his basic attitude was, when you turn 60, this had better be fairly concrete. And the second one, as he said, is that in regards to family members, those children who are near and live near the parents, he and my mother decided, would be treated differently than children who lived away. That's a very important distinction, because they had some physical activities with their parents.
Well, and that's interesting because a lot of people just want to be fair.
Yes, people across the board. That's
every
right.
Child. And you were one of 6, right?
Yes, youngest of 6. That's right, yes, with 5 older brothers and sisters who all left the farm in the 1950s and 60s, and all very willingly, but they had no interest in agriculture, even any of them. However, the other thing my dad said, and it just said very clearly, and my mother's name was Dorothy, and he says, Dorothy and I shall be the decision makers here with no referendum. And it's a very clear message. I've talked to people that say, well, my parents' property is my property. Well, baloney. Your parents' property is your parents' property, and those decisions are to be respected amongst those decision makers. But those decisions should not get put off till those people are decrepit.
Right, and we see this all the time with families where dad or mom goes into a decline and the fighting begins.
Yes, yes, because there was no planning. And this, again, my father saw. And so his message to take this bull by the horns at a relatively early stage in life, he used the word when you're about 60, to be the decision makers here. My dad didn't say we'll get the lawyer involved and have the lawyer make decisions. He did not say we're not going to listen to anybody, but he said that it's the people that own it, my mother and I, who will be the decision makers here, period, and the children will have to abide by theirs. So my father and mother made the decision to sell Irina and I this 240 acres in the late 1970s, which benefited us. However, at the same time, he had a kind of a complicated will, and he did things in his will that were beneficial to my five brothers and sisters, which we weren't part of, but that was an agreement, and my dad was very clear with his family members about this agreement, you know, that so there wasn't anything really in hiding there at all.
And so there are no hard feelings?
No, the six of us get along very, very well through the death of both my mother in 85, my dad in 98. We have good relationships amongst them. They understand that my wife and I benefited because of the fact that we're on the farm and things here have been well for us. But that's the lot of life. I think that message that my parents said was really, really important, because the other thing that they wanted to do was to prevent a cause for derision amongst family members. And that was another very, very, of course you can't prevent that completely, but they were going to try to do things to abate that, to cut that off. And we're very fortunate. Things worked out well with the six of us. However, all these influences really, really came to bear as we began this planning process for ourselves.
All right. And your dad said you had to have a plan in place by the time you were 60. So when did you start planning?
When I was about 56, we started into very serious discussions about this. And it took about 4 years. I call it a gestation process, and it really was as that. It took a long time. And it began with just discussions that Irina and I had about where and what we thought and what directions.
And do you have a child who wants to take over
the
farm?
Oh, yeah. We have two daughters. Both are married. And we have a son who's single, who lives 3 miles away, who has a great interest in farming. He actually farms with us here, but he's involved with the business that we own as well. So,
which I know that that's a step that's difficult for a lot of farmers, because a lot of farmers don't have a child who wants to take over.
Yes.
So you do have someone in the family who's interested in taking over. How did you go about figuring out your plan?
Well, what we did is, after some discussion, we involved a consultant who specializes in this. He toured the farm and met with us, and I think we probably had 3 meetings with this specialist. But I remember the first discussion very, very clearly, because it was right as he got in the yard and he came out of the car, and I told him, I said, well, Irina and I own a business. We buy, process, and sell organic soy proteins, and it's a part of our life, I said. But I says, we don't have to discuss that. We're just here to talk about the farm. He looked at me, he shook his head, and the first thing he laughed is he said, that business is part of your assets, part of your estate, and I think it's where we should start with the planning process, and then later on handle something as difficult as the farm. And whether you like or dislike this fellow, he earned his keep right there, because he right off the spot corrected the situation that this is the entire situation we're going to have to deal with. We're not going to come here to deal with part of it. So he then, with our assistance, with his assistance, created a transfer plan, but we started with this non-farm business, which really was a big help, because we were able to develop a plan there in a fair amount of time that everybody was comfortable with, and then that laid the groundwork to go into something far more complicated.
Your plan that you have put into place now doesn't actually leave the farm to your son. What did you decide to do?
Well, wonder why it takes 4 years. The business plan, what it did is we bought a whole life insurance policy on my wife. We benefited the two daughters with that, and the value of that insurance policy is based on the value of the business, and that the son inherits the business. and that the business carries the premiums for the life insurance. And that's fairly simple. And so what goes on is when we pass away, the son ends up with a business, the daughters end up with cash proceeds from life insurance, and the business was not put in a situation where the daughters were owning part of it and the son had part of it and they had to try to decide what was going to go on. So that cut the possibility of having hard feelings between our children, because the daughters have nothing except an insurance income, but that's guaranteed. The son has got the business, and he's got to try to make a profit out of it if he can or not. So that cut the slot to start with, which really helped us out. But then, for at least 2 years, we wandered in the desert. We really did, trying to figure out what we're going to do. We looked at what the consultant suggested us to do on the farm. We thought about the plan for at least 6 months, and then we rejected his plan in completely. But we were able
all right.
To make
well, that- we're going to find out what your plan is in just a moment, Tom. We have to take a short break. We're talking about farm transfer this hour. This conversation inspired by the new play Map of My Kingdom by Mary Swander. And Tom Franson is one of the farmers she talked to in preparation for writing that play. He's a farmer near New Hampton, and we'd love to hear from you this hour as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join our conversation. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about farm transfer, which is a very tricky issue in the state of Iowa. Land, of course, is our most valuable resource, and farmland changing hands is a lot more complicated than you might think. We're talking this hour with Mary Swander. She is the author of the new play, Map of My Kingdom, which is a play about this complicated issue. It will be performed in Sheridan coming up next Thursday, the 25th at 6 p.m., part of the Vredenburg Performing Arts Series, and then also in Red Oak, Sunday, September 28th at the Wilson Performing Arts Center. And we'd love for you to join our conversation this hour as well. I know this is something a lot of people have a lot of experience with. You can share your stories at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I'm also talking with Tom Franson, who's a farmer who has watched this struggle in his own family. He's making plans for the future, for the next farmland transfer that's going to occur in his family. And Tom, right before the break, we were just up to the point. So you had a consultant come in. He made a recommendation. You've got three kids, a son who wants to work on the farm. He made a recommendation, and then you decided you didn't want to go that route.
Yeah, we rejected it incompletely in regards to the farm, but that rejection took time because, you see, Irina and I really were wandering through this process. We really felt like we were lost in a wilderness. What we didn't have was a goal, and we follow a management practice called holistic management on this farm that basically says that you really don't know where you're going until you define what you want anyway. So we thought about it for a while and developed a goal for our farm transfer, which is we were seeking true protection long-term for a family farm that has conservation features blended into a working landscape. And once we defined that goal, once we wrote that, then our path out of literally the wilderness was much, much easier because we could test proposed actions and see if it was going to lead us towards our goal. And so we rejected what the consultant had for the farmland because it would have divided the farm up. It would have exposed the farm to something would have gone on here. We could saw all kinds of things that could have went wrong with what he proposed. And after some thinking then, we came across with the idea that maybe my wife and I should be the last individual owners of this land. And so that was a real critical decision. We decided to seek a nonprofit foundation that had similar thinking and to bequeath this 320 acres to that foundation. And under the terms that Franz and descendant, or if we fail to produce a descendant or another tenant, will be the tenants of this farm, and the landlords will be, in this situation, the board of directors of the Practical Farmers of Iowa. It was, It's really a controversial decision from many people's eyes. But Irina and I, after we thought about it, were very comfortable with it. Then we wrote this business plan up, and then we had a lengthy meeting with all of our children and in-laws as well, and went over this plan one line at a time. And it took most of a day. The day went very, very well. And we all left in agreement that, you know, this is what the plan is going to be.
How does that change your life now to have this plan in place? What does that do for you?
Well, the first thing it did was when we wrote the proposal up, what we did was I had talked to Teresa Olpheim, the executive director of the Practical Farmers of Iowa, in depth prior to this. And then when Irene wrote it and I wrote it up, we called Teresa and we told her, we're going to fax this to you. It's got to be confidential to start with, and you have to take it to the board. When we put that document in the fax, I had said a prayer to the spirit of my dead parents. Again, we're a little emotional about this, kind of silly. But when we hit start on that fax machine, a great peace came over me. And then in the next few weeks, I called my brothers and sisters and went over this plan with them. And my brother said, if you feel very peaceful about this, he says, I'm sure you've made the right decision. And since then, you know, we've just felt that way. So my answer to that is that we're at peace. We know we're only going to be here so long. We want this farm kept intact. We want it, and we were not real specific in our plan, you know, how the land is managed. But we don't want it divided and tore up or a part of another consolidated farm by any means. And so we believe that, going back to our goal, that we have a plan in place that's sound towards our goal.
And that goes back to that message from the Pope in 1979.
It really does, yeah.
The land is yours to be preserved for generation upon generation. We're talking about farmland transfer this hour, and you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Sam is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Charity.
And you have a different perspective on this, not as a farmer.
That's correct. Charity, my name is Sam Creamer, and I practice law in West Des Moines. And I wanted to commend the extensive planning and documentation that your guest has provided. And I want to make sure that you consider the importance of properly drafted and specific documents. I think that he was very fortunate to work with a good team of professionals. And I think that when you're looking at transferring something as emotional as a farm, you really have to make sure your professional team is up to the task and properly documents your intent.
So you've run into situations where a lack of documentation causes a lot of strife?
Not only does it cause strife, but it allows for otherwise meaningless things to occur. In our practice, we find that the fights over wills are really fights over the red trike that somebody got when they were five and somebody else didn't get. So to the extent that an estate is properly documented and a testamentary plan is properly thought out, it really promotes family harmony.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for sharing that perspective.
You are welcome.
And, of course, Tom, you saw that firsthand because, as you mentioned, your grandfather had a verbal agreement with your dad, and then when it came time to execute it, there was no paper trail. There was no way to look at that. And Mary, I want to go back to you because Tom has so generously shared his story this hour. And his story is part of your play, mm-hmm. although not in the guise of Tom Franzen telling the story. How does this come about in a fictional world?
The story about the Pope was just too moving, powerful to leave out. And so I fictionalized it. And it's a woman, actually, who tells it, who goes to see the Pope. And then she hears those profound words, the land is yours to preserve from generation to generation. And it transforms her. As Tom says, it gets you thinking long term, not in your own little space bubble. And so I developed it and had her seeing the Pope in his Pope mobile and things like that. But I kept drafting the script and thought, you know, I left out that story and then I kept coming back to it and then I left it out. And then the director said that it's just such a great moment that let's fictionalize it and try to use it here. So,
Tom, what's
thank
it
you,
like?
Tom.
Right? What's it like to hear your story told? Have you seen the play?
Oh yes. Oh yeah. We were. My wife couldn't go to the first session near Iowa City, where that was, West Branch.
Right.
I was really dumbstruck by it, but also I thought it was handled very, very well. I thought Mary did a great job. I think Irene and I would have felt very uneasy if it was clearer between my actual story. So I think Mary did a brilliant job there. Irene went, and she and I saw it in Decorah 2 weeks ago, and she was just speechless at it because she said it was so well done. If Mary would have taken it and used our names or made the story more clearer to what actually happened, I think it would have made us uncomfortable. Because we've never wanted to be on the spotlight in this situation. We made our story about we're going to do this farm public very deliberately to encourage discussions of people to take this bull by the horns and go out and do something and don't wait until you're decrepit and then dump this decision on somebody else. It's way too critical of a matter.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, it strikes me. I mean, there are so many people who have very important things at stake in this situation. I mean, we've talked about the fact that there are farmers who rent their land from elderly people who own the land. And then when their landlords die, often their heirs take the opportunity to take their inheritance and cash out. And so that leaves a renting farmer with no land and no livelihood. So that's a group that has a tremendous amount at stake. We've been talking, Tom, about you. I mean, as the farmer who is looking at the future of that land, the landowners have a tremendous amount at stake because, of course, they're the people who've invested their whole lives in this land. Mm-hmm. And Mary, that makes it such a complicated issue because this is not just a business.
That's right.
This is a home.
Right. That's what's always complicated about farming. It's unlike most other occupations where you actually live at the same place where you have your business. And so you have memories and nostalgia and family connections. But I have to say, you know, sometimes we have this like urban-rural divide. And as I've just been engaged in this play now for a few months, and I just got back from New York City, and, you know, I was telling people about it there, and they said, oh, you know, we have the same problems when we own an apartment building. And I thought, oh. I mean, not exactly the same problems,
right,
of course, but owning anything, and that's, I try to bring that out in the play. Who really owns the land? Do we have ownership of the land? What, you know, where is the Native Americans' concept of owning the land? You know, they found their livelihood on the land. They existed here, but this ownership is really a European idea, and you know, that seems to me at the core of part, you know, much of the problem.
Well, and so there's the two groups that I just talked about. Of course, there's the offspring, the people mm-hmm. who stand to inherit either money or land. And then, of course, there's the rest of us. Because, I mean, this is the most valuable resource in Iowa. And there are a lot more corporate farms than there used to be. And this kind of problem feeds into corporations being the only people who can, or the only organizations who could afford this land, right?
It's a real pressure on the family farm in particular.
I want to get back to the phones. Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Boy, I got on quick.
Yeah, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm kind of a radical rouser. I'm 75 years old. I live on the same piece of land I was born on. That's farmland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Iowa has some of the best farmland in the world. The farmland contributes greatly to our economy in this state. And if we cover this land up with ticky-tack houses and Walmart parking lots, that doesn't feed the world. We don't need the people in Iowa that we used to have on 80 acres farming with horses, because we have tractors. You can pull up to the gate to punch the GPS, pull the blinds down, and watch reruns of Dr. Phil and Oprah. So I think we should think real hard about inviting more people to the state to cover up the land and preserve the land. Be a little bit like Oregon. Come visit us, but go home.
Well, Mark, I think just listening to you helps to convey the tremendous importance of this subject. I mean, Mary, there's so much emotion and there's so much at stake.
That's right. And the problem Mark's talking about, urban sprawl in particular, is another huge pressure on our farmland. I think it's something we should really, really think about seriously. Our farmland, as he says, is the, you know, top land, and do we pour concrete across it?
In the play, we've talked about all of these different groups of people who have stakes in this subject. Do you try to portray the different groups of people?
Mm-hmm. I tried to keep it really balanced, and, you know, people have their different slants and takes and philosophies on farming, and I tried to show different sides of that. And sometimes you find that even in the same family. And I included a couple there that the husband was row cropping and the wife and the family was running around with a chicken tractor. And so, you know, sometimes these things coexist in the same piece of land.
Well, and Mark's statement, his mention of his age. I mean, Tom, you must have friends, colleagues who are at a point in their career where they know they can't farm forever. But sometimes it doesn't. The answer of what to do with your land is so difficult. Do you find people who just can't make a plan because they're so afraid that the land will be divided up?
Oh, I think that goes on all the time. And what I encourage people to know, and that's why I want to share our story as much as we can, is that you can't get out of the wilderness without a goal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a goal, you can't test at proposed actions. They're useless. You don't know if you're heading which direction.
You sat down and wrote
You
wrote a mission statement, right, Tom?
Yeah.
You and Irene?
I
think that's key for people, too.
Oh, absolutely. And that is part of holistic management, but that management served us well. But in the transitional planning, we would still be in the wilderness without a goal. I'm convinced of that. Because you can't get out. You can't get past the emotion. You can't get past all the other obstacles if you don't have a reason to get past them.
Tom, when you think about it, your dad made a great plan, and he sounds like a very wise man.
He did a very good job of planning, yes.
But when I think about the resources that you have at your disposal that he never would have had access to, I mean, there are a lot more resources out there now today.
That dad had none. No. He created the planning process he had out of just basically good old-fashioned farmer common sense. Take the bull by the horns. Don't put this thing off. We'll make decisions here. We make it clear we love all our children, but that, you know, things have to be done differently so that there's long-term transfer here, so that there things have a future. My long-dead father, I praise him immensely about that because it was correct what he did.
There's a lot of wisdom there. Tom, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I didn't mean to get so emotional before, but I cannot tell that Pope story. I've told it 100 times, and I cannot do it without getting overwhelmed.
Oh, Tom, thank you so much. Tom Franzen is a farmer near New Hampton. And Mary Swander, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity. It was a pleasure.
Mary Swander is the author of the new play, Map of My Kingdom. It will be performed in Sheridan next Thursday, the 25th, and then in Red Oak on Sunday, the 28th. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We'll be right back.